You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Owning a house on Cape Cod is a dream for many, but a reality for few. Jack Griffin, the protagonist of Richard Russo's latest novel called That Old Cape Magic, summered there as a child on the Cape, his parents renting a different house each year. And now as an adult, he returns to the area for a wedding and to spread his father's ashes. But his parents prove harder to get rid of than he thinks. The novel is published by Knopf. Richard Russo, who is the author of 6 books, one of which, Empire Falls, won the Pulitzer Prize in 2002, joins me now. He returned to the show. By the way, he's also written a collection of short stories and a number of screenplays. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Great to be here.
You have such a strong connection to Maine, so why did you choose to set this book in Cape Cod?
Well, until fairly recently, the coast of Maine has been relatively affordable. And this is a book about a particular kind of place yearning, I suppose. Griffin's parents can't afford the Cape. They can visit there every year, and they can hope that maybe one of them will get promoted or will get a book contract or something like that. But every time they do and go back, the Cape has just outdistanced them a little bit.
And they say snide things about it, even though they yearn to be part of it.
Yeah, they divide the island into, or they divide the Cape into can't afford it and wouldn't have it as a gift.
Did you ever vacation there?
I got taken as Griffin did. I got taken to Martha's Vineyard as a kid, 1 year, by my mother. And I never forgot it. It was, in my imagination as that magical place. And I started taking my kids there after my wife Barbara and I got married. But then I started going to the Cape a few years ago when I decided to write this book and needed to learn a little something about it.
Well, how much of the satire in this book is based on personal experience? I'm thinking about that, the yearning because we're all embarrassed that when we go to the Hamptons or the Cape, that on one level we want this, and on another level we think that it's all for other people and should be for other people.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
at least I'm that way.
I am absolutely that way. This is a book about really about foolish yearning, and yet I'm the biggest fool of all in that regard, I suspect. When you log on your computer in the morning and the MSN page comes up or the Google page, whatever, and you see that little thing in the left hand corner that says 10 best places in the United States to live, who doesn't click on that? You know, I've been clicking on those things all through.
And they don't choose New York, which really upsets me.
Yeah.
Well, but this ridiculous yearning also applies to Griffin's parents yearning for working at a different kind of an academic setting. They're stuck in a Midwestern university instead of what they would like, a smaller, more prestigious school in the East.
Right.
Now, you've worked in the smaller, more prestigious schools in the East.
It's true. It's true, yeah.
His parents are bitter, hurtful figures and somewhat larger than life. Is that the way that Griffin remembers them, or could they really have been that terrible?
Well, this is a book about memory, among other things. One of the things that Griffin is trying to do is write a short story based on one of those summers on the Cape, and he finds that his memory is insufficient to the events, and he keeps checking back with his mother, who has a totally different recollection of things. And even when his mother is on her deathbed, she's revising memory. So I think that his parents were central figures in his life, the way most of our parents were and are. And I think that in most respects, they don't die when they die. We continue those conversations with our mother and father forever.
Well, the short story that he's working on over the course of the novel is called The Summer of the Brownings.
Right.
Now, the Brownings had what we consider to have been the Elizabeth Barrett and Robert, a perfect wedding,
yeah.
A perfect marriage.
Yeah,
are you referring to that in any way?
I think that the Brownings, the way Griffin remembers the Brownings, is probably idealized. What he's looking for in that summer of the Brownings really is to be adopted. he makes a friend of the Browning boy and little girl, his sister, and he just adores those parents because they're everything his parents aren't.
Is this a problem in writing, the problem that Griffin has in writing the story, a problem that writers have in general? You're a writer of fiction, so you make things up. On the other hand, you often are inspired by real events, and you're not sure just how close you should stick to the way you remember things or the reality of the thing and how much should not be.
Yeah, and I remember back when I was teaching fiction writing, I would always talk about that with my students, of course, because for inspiration, your imagination, you can't leap from the air into the air. You have to leap from something real, something solid, and it can be memory, it can be something you're observing outside your window. The thing that I found so fascinating about Griffin's attempts and failures, various failures during the course of this novel to write this story, was that his failure to write it is a character failure, and that's to me, for being as a writer, the most terrifying thing of all is that sometimes we find that our inability to do something, to write the story as well as we possibly can, is rooted somehow deep in our own character, in our own misunderstanding of events.
You can get away with craft, but in the end, that other thing that makes something really good is where the character comes in.
And in Griffin's case, in this story, his trying so desperately to write that story and failing parallels what's failed in his own life, because he's been, in trying to write that story, he thought that the most important thing was to keep his own parents out of it. Well, that's what he's been trying to do in his life, too.
You mentioned when you were on the show the last time that you don't like to write about writers, and yet here you are. This is not the first time you've written about a writer. You did Bridge of Sighs as well.
That's right.
So why have you broken that rule for yourself?
I try to break all of my hard and fast rules. But no, well, I guess I made Griffin a screenwriter,
as opposed to a
novelist, and I have been a screenwriter to give it a little bit of distance. And it's true, I try to avoid writing about writers because I don't want it to be terribly self-referential. But it's, you know, it's hard to find things that you know anything about.
Well, is Griffin a better writer at pure fantasy because his screenplays are like that more than what he's trying to do in his fiction?
I'm not quite sure I follow the question.
Well, in the end, when you're writing something, you're writing a novel or a
right,
short story.
Right.
You're really writing something totally out of, you know, it's your rules. So you're writing something for the movies. You're writing something for the movies.
That's true.
Forget about the collaborative aspect of it. It's much more likely to be something that's got a strong fantasy element. Unless you are a European auteur,
right,
you're not going to be doing something that is really, you know, Richard Russo's 8.5.
That's true. And that's the blessed thing about writing for the movies, actually, is that you can surrender a little bit. Writing a novel is a little bit like waking up in a cave and you're just kind of following the walls of the cave and trying to figure out where you are and how big the room is and what its size and shape are. When you're hired to write something in Hollywood, a lot of those questions have already been answered for you before you even write the first word.
My guest is Richard Russo, whose latest book is That Old Cape Magic, a novel published by Knopp. You also told me when you were here that you usually don't write short stories, and yet we've talked about your collection, The Horse Child, and you've told interviewers that this started as a short story.
It did. I was trying actually to kind of mark time. I was exhausted after I finished writing Bridge of Sighs. It was a I've never had a novel take as much out of me as that book did. It was a darker journey and a longer journey than I anticipated. And when I finished it, I just thought, boy, I don't have the I don't have the necessary strength to start a novel, so I'll write a screenplay and I'll write a short story and kind of mark time. I didn't want to not write.
And what did it begin with? Because I can imagine it might have begun with Griffin, but it might have begun with the twin structure of the two weddings, which would have reflected something that was happening in your own life.
That came a little bit later as a result of what was happening in my own life. During the course of writing this book, both of my daughters got married. So I was writing this novel and planning actual weddings and writing in at least one of the wedding scenes in this novel, writing the most disastrous wedding scene I could imagine, hoping that it wouldn't happen in real life.
Oh, I was wondering about that very funny rehearsal dinner scene where Griffin's father-in-law plunges into a hedge from the ramp above.
Yes, in a wheelchair, which ends up on top of him, and he's trying to wheel himself out.
You made that up. It's been pointed out by many reviewers that this is another kind of a break for you because your previous writing's mostly been set in small towns, and this is in here. In this story, you go from L.A. to Boston and back, hitting a few vacation spots along the way. A conscious attempt to break with your past?
Yeah, I thought it was time for a vacation. This book has a great vacation cover on it, actually. I think this book was a bit of vacation from the world, especially of Bridge of Sighs, but also my darker Milltown novels. This book is probably a little bit more remind readers a little bit more of Straight Man, my academic satire, and some of the same objects of satire are present in this book, especially in Griffin's parents, these disgruntled academics.
Although, to some degree, as much as Griffin wants to get away from his parents, he seems to be becoming more and more like them.
Oh, isn't that always the way? Yeah. Griffin stands in the mirror every morning and wondering when exactly did his father's nose appear there, taking over his face.
The title refers, of course, to a famous song,
right?
And we're hearing more and more of books having their own theme music these days. Was that song in the back of your head while you were writing it?
You know, only the title. You know, if somebody had asked me to hum the song, I don't think I could do it even now. Somebody sent me the Louis Prima version of it recently, and I quite liked it. But no, it was just the lyric that I needed, and it's not been a particularly favorite song of mine or anything. But the idea of a magical place.
You're at the beginning of a book tour. That usually means for many writers interrupting their work. Have you interrupted something?
Well, I am working on a couple of different things right now. I'm writing a pilot for HBO, and as a matter of fact, just finished a draft of that. Screenplays are easy to interrupt and come back to. I think easier than novels.
And when you were working on Empire Falls, the television version or the screenplay version. Mm-hmm. Was it as personal as writing the novel?
I remember that writing Empire Falls, it was probably the most personal, certainly of my screenplays. And part of that was because not only did I want to do a good job of it because I was so proud of the book, but also I wanted to do a good job because it was really Paul Newman who had talked me into doing it, and he had made this his project. He was the one that made all those phone calls to all those wonderful stars. And Fred Skepsey, the director, involved me far more than anybody had ever involved me in a movie that I was working on. So there were a lot of reasons other than the book itself to do really good work on this.
That Old Cape Magic is Richard Russo's latest novel. It's published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard.